we released a couple months ago a product that we call our Electric Design to Delivery Index, or EDDI, or affectionately internally we call it the EDDI. What the EDDI does is it shows both for that supply signal and the demand signal, it shows 2 years of history. So you're going to see the last 2 years across, I believe it's we have nine categories and then 15 subcategories below that.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the On Track podcast. I am your host, Zach Peterson, and today I'll be talking with Dan Schoenfelder, head of sales and marketing for Nexar and head of Octopart. He's working a dual role these days, and I think it's going to be fun to talk about the Nexar suite of products and the ecosystem and where Octopart fits into this. Dan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Zach. It's a real pleasure to be here. Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you. So you are someone who has been with Altium for a while, but not necessarily in like the boards and systems group where, you know, I get to participate. You're part of this other product that even some Altium users, I think, don't really know about. So maybe if you could tell us your background and then your role within the Altium family of brands, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'd like to say that I'm a veteran of the electronics space in general. I've been with Altium, as you said, about 5 years now. And prior to my time at Altium, I worked for Arrow Electronics, the large electronics distribution company. And I spent some time in their digital strategy group and did some interesting things there, like help them build their marketplace business, which is called Veracal. And prior to my time at Arrow Electronics, I was at Flex in contract manufacturing. And when I was there, I was in a global supply chain capacity and put together really complex supply chain strategies for customers like Hewlett-Packard, Juniper Networks were a couple that I spent time working on. So anyway, you know, I feel like the last 15 years of my career has really kind of prepared me for these unique times that we're in right now, because I feel like I understand the perspective that a lot of stakeholders in this industry have relative to the experiences that I've had in the industry. So yeah, it's been a journey for sure, and one that it's been great for me to be a part of this industry.
So just as you reflect on your experience working on the manufacturing and sourcing and supply chain side of the industry, I'd like to ask you this. Have you ever seen it this bad?
No, this cannot compare to anything. You know, when you think about the intensity and the duration of shortages and things that we've seen here. I've been in this industry long enough to see a number of difficult circumstances come and go. Tantalum capacitors are a category that seems to always have problems with raw materials and therefore creating volatility. And I've seen probably three or four cycles of tantalum capacitors come and go, but that lasts, you know, several months, maybe a couple of years. You know, people work on redesigns and board spins, and those things tend to go away over time. But yeah, I would say right now is absolutely we've never seen anything like this. And the reality is, I think some of the data that we have is showing us right now that what we're seeing is relatively normal in a lot of pockets of the industry. But there are certain categories that just are seeing extreme problems, and obviously semiconductor products are one of them, and microcontrollers specifically. But yeah, I can say 100%, I am glad that I'm working in the capacity I am in now versus trying to plan a supply chain for a company like Hewlett-Packard or Juniper Networks at this time.
Yeah, I could only imagine how that gets very complex. I mean, I get to work on, you know, smaller projects and eventually hand it off to a manufacturing partner that is then going to, you know, take over that procurement strategy and building a supply chain around a product. So, you know, I get to see it on the front end as a smaller designer. But how does the process look to a large company when they need to actually plan sustainable production for large, you know, sustained production runs over time?
Yeah, that's, there are a number of factors in play, obviously. And, there's a lot that can be done on the design side to prepare for sustainability of products. Obviously, coming to the table with a thoughtful design to begin with is one that's that has both the characteristics that are necessary for both the manufacturability of a product, but also the a BOM or umbilical material that has resiliency as well too. There are a lot of different things and strategies and approaches companies can take to achieving that. And I can tell you from being on the manufacturing side, there are shortcuts that happen, and there are obviously go-to-market timeframes that impact that, and other implications, I'm sure, as well too. But from a supply chain perspective specifically, though, trying to design in products that are in prime life cycle is something that's huge. Designing with products where you can have multiple sourcing options. And when I mean that, I mean multiple manufacturers on your approved supplier, approved vendor list for a given part. You know, those are really two kind of just blocking and tackling things that I think I'd love every designer to have in mind when they're pulling together some new list of parts they're working with.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think now companies are, or at least the smaller designers and smaller companies, are taking the strategy that the big OEMs are taking, which is order early, order extra. We hear in the news all the time about double ordering. Now orders have gone, you know, non-returnable, non-cancelable, and people are putting it more on the front end instead of just assuming that everything is just going to always be available on the back end.
Yeah, I think this is a if you were to ask my opinion on how do we arrive in these circumstances right now, I think that some of it is a byproduct of lean manufacturing. There's been a big push to move liabilities down your supply chain. And that could be inventory ownership, that could be any number of factors. And it's resulted, at least in part, it's played a role in where we find ourselves now, because we've driven so much cost out of the manufacturing, out of the manufacturing cycle by avoiding ownership of inventory. And to me, it's now manifesting itself in exactly what you were describing, non-cancelable, non-returnable orders, and really inflexible supply chains has been the result of that. So I feel like over the course of 20 years or so, when lean manufacturing was a really, really kind of, I wouldn't say a really new concept, but it was relatively new and not widely adopted 20 years ago. When contract manufacturing was beginning to gain prominence, but manufacturing in China wasn't much of a thing, to the environment that we find ourselves in today, where the dominant manufacturing geography is Asia, and you combine that with this inflexibility of supply chains right now, it just has created a perfect storm for us to kind of experience the market conditions that we are.
Yeah, I remember about a year ago listening on CNBC as people were talking about, supply chain and automotive chip shortages and just chip shortages generally. It seemed like every night in the news, it was something forever. And I think everyone would have thought that it would have been over by now. But I think people don't realize manufacturing capacity doesn't just spin up overnight. And now, even Intel's CEO, Pat Gelsinger, is projecting, I think, 2023 at least. Was how long this whole episode with chip shortages would last? Something to that effect.
Yeah. It's interesting for our industry to be front page news on a consistent basis when it's businesses that aren't Intel.
Right.
This Intel kind of drives a different level of interest than most companies in our space. But yeah, it's I think it was last week as well too that that Texas Instruments downgraded earnings expectations for this quarter because their fabs and manufacturing facilities that they're relying upon are closing due to COVID in China. And so I think that, we seem to be going in these waves of problems that we're seeing that are both pandemic driven, that are demand driven. To me, this points to something that's near and dear to me, and that is the fact that there clearly is just not enough good information out there to make better decisions. And that, that's part of the business that I'm responsible for inside of Ultium, is being in the business of enabling better decisions. And so I think one of these interesting trends that we're seeing is there, despite the fact that there's more information available than there's ever been at any stage of design. It doesn't matter if you're a designer using Ultium Designer, or if you're somebody that's on in procurement at a contract manufacturer. You've got more information at your fingertips today than you had at any point in time in your career. But the reality is, it's not good enough. It still doesn't allow for flexible planning and for us to be proactive enough to respond to these sorts of challenges. So I feel like we still have a long way to go as an industry to arrive at a place where we could potentially weather these sorts of circumstances.
Yeah, you bring up the massive amount of information that is out there, especially around parts and parts that you can choose from, distributor information, go on down the list. It seems really difficult to, or I think this is one of the challenges with large data sets generally, is being able to compile it into a format that's easy to understand, consume, make actionable decisions quickly, and move on to the next problem.
Yeah, this is so speaking specifically about Octoport, which hopefully most of the listeners slash watchers of this podcast are familiar with. But if you're not, Octoport is a search engine for electronic components. It is owned by Ultium, and it is part of the Ultium's Nexar business unit. But Octoport has somewhere approaching 60 million parts that are available to find all kinds of data, from price and availability to part specifications to data sheets and images and CAD models. And the goal of Octopart from the start has been to democratize information. It's been to provide users and stakeholders of the industry with easy, simple to find access to decision-making criteria. And I think it's been a very successful journey. Octopart has grown tremendously since my time at Ultium. Our feature sets continue to get richer all the time. And I think one of the biggest sellers of this that I haven't mentioned is it's all free. You don't have to pay anything for it. But what your comment that kind of led me into this thread is that what gets minimized in that that's the hard work behind that is in that compiling, in the normalization of that information. You're talking about bringing in data sets from disparate sources, literally thousands of sources of information every day, and making sure that that brands are represented in one unified way, that part numbers are represented in one unified way. And there's a lot of secret sauce that exists behind the scenes that makes that all possible. And so I'm really proud of the work the team has done to kind of enable that experience, that search experience online to users of all kinds.
So I'm going to be a shill for Octopart for just a moment, because I think one of my favorite features on Octopart, with regards to finding components, especially if you need to find like a substitute component, is the filters. Being able to filter down by specification, by package size. Package size is huge, especially if you're doing replacements. By simple stuff like voltage, current rating, whatever it may be. For me, that's huge. It's a huge time saver. Yeah, I can do it on, a distributor website. So, I could go to the big distributors and get, get the same kind of filters, but it's only their inventory. It really helps to be able to see everybody's stuff all at once. I can make a plan as far as who I'm going to buy through. What's really nice is I can see, oh, it's already available at this one distributor. I'm already going to buy all my other parts from. Just add it to the order.
No, I appreciate that. That's this is why we do these things. I think that that certainly the ability to filter, one of the features that I think that that has been most impactful to us in my tenure, so in 5 years here, has happened about very early in my time at Octopart at Altium. Was enabling a feature we called search by specs. But essentially what it does is allows inside of our search bar, it normalizes for units of measure. It normalizes for fractions, decimals. And so what we've essentially done is parsed out not just the description of a part, not just the part number, but everything in the data sheet. And makes it discoverable by our search algorithms. And I think it enables us to really to kind of get it to deliver results that that are the true intended results of a search. So we're really proud of the discoverability options that you have when you're in Octopart, whether it's the search bar itself, whether it's the features like the parametric features and the filtering abilities that you mentioned as well, Zach.
Well, and then I think one thing that some Altium users and maybe even users of other search platforms don't realize is that Octopart is actually supplying a lot of the data that they're using when they're using their part search features. What gave you guys the idea to become kind of the data kings of the electronic components
Wow,
world?
you just gave me a significant promotion, so I appreciate that. But no, I think this is a great opportunity for me to introduce our Nexar business unit as well too. So Octopart is part of our Nexar business unit, and one of the things that that has happened as a result of us, evolving this business unit and bringing it to fruition over the last 20, I'd say 20 months or so. Is that we've rebranded our API. So what was formerly the Octopart API has been taken on as part of the Nexar API. So that rebranding is done, but the API and the contents of it from anyone who is familiar with the Octopart API is the same. And you're right. We have literally thousands and thousands of API keys that are in circulation across the industry that are powering web experiences that are not our own, that are powering OEMs and their data needs. And that that to me, that's I wouldn't say it's ubiquitous to the industry quite, but to me, it's really great that we've become kind of a de facto standard of the industry when it comes to providing information, and I'm really proud of the interfaces that we have as well too. Like just to get a little bit techie as I can get on this, the Nexar API is has a GraphQL endpoint and allows us to be extremely flexible with the data that we do make available. So pretty much any time that you see something in the Octopart user experience online, you can obtain that information through the Nexar API programmatically and incorporate that into your native workflows inside of your businesses. And I think that that's when we talk about this ideal of democratizing information, it gets to the core of it.
Well, democratizing information kind of goes both ways because as one thing that I have seen a lot more of in recent years on the platform is secondhand distributors and brokers coming onto the platform and listing parts. And I think people may have mixed feelings about it. I do have one broker overseas that I have never had a problem with. So I go to them when it's an emergency. I think some people will tell you, hey, never use the brokers, and maybe that's a matter of personal opinion, but it seems like you've democratized it in the other direction as well, basically allowing anyone to come on and possibly list their parts. How do you feel about that, and how do you think others should feel about, having, I guess you could say, strangers come onto the platform and list whatever they
That's a
want?
really great question, especially in this time that we're in right now of extreme scarcity of parts and specifically in some categories. I think that traditional buying channels are just not an option in some cases, and therefore looking into a secondary market for products is a necessity. A few things that I want to say about what we do is first off, we don't just allow anybody on the platform. We do follow some protocols that we utilize a company called ERAI, who is an excellent organization. I encourage everybody to go out and check them out, but they're an excellent organization for vetting the industry for fraudulent actors and kind of bad players in the industry. They keep a database of those. And so any partner that comes to us that wants to list inventory, we're working with ERAI to ensure that that those sources can be trusted. That said, we also really aren't in a place to be the policeman of the industry either. We do encourage any user of Octopart or our data to vet if they're going from a secondary source, that those sources are providing them with parts that are going to be suitable for their design. And any legitimate company is going to allow you to vet that opportunity. They're going to allow you to test parts, and they're going to allow you to do what's necessary to determine that both that their pedigree is fine of the parts, but also that those parts are going to be functional for your designs as well. But yeah, there's been definitely a prominence of those players, coming forward and participating on the platform, and I think they do play an integral role in supporting some of our customers in this time of need.
Sure, and that's actually good to hear that you guys have a vetting mechanism in place, because I think from the surface, and especially if you don't know, what's going on in the background of the platform, you start to see all these strange names come up on the non-authorized distributor list for a part, and I think it's natural for someone to get a little suspicious. One thing I see is with some brokers, they'll just list another broker's inventory. And it's like you go to this guy, they're just going to buy it from the other guy and, be the middleman or something like
Yeah,
that.
and one thing, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Zach, but one thing I would say about that too is we do have feedback loops at Octopart as well too. So we encourage users that are experiencing those sorts of issues where they know inventory is not real, or they've gone to a source and found out that information that originated to them at Octopart is no longer relevant, or is just not true. Go to our feedback loops, provide us information. We'll pull that inventory off the site. We'll go and validate with the seller of those parts, or the person who claims they can sell those parts, and make sure that we're doing everything we can to protect user interests, but also to have the best product possible at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Like I said, I think some people might look at that and, scratch their heads a little bit, but I guess that's one of the double-edged sword issues of democratizing data is, you come at it from both ways. So that's great to hear that you guys are taking an active role in maintaining the platform and making sure that it's safe for buyers.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely something that's very important to us.
Sure. So, with Octopart being not just a data aggregator but a provider, you were talking about, the Nexar business unit and I guess the ecosystem that's being created with the Nexar suite of products with the different partners that are part of that ecosystem. Yeah, and you mentioned that OEMs are using the data. I'm wondering how are OEMs using the data? Do you have any insight into that?
I can't get into the specifics of the OEMs themselves, but absolutely. I think that there are a lot of companies that either have homegrown tools to support engineering and design, or homegrown tools to support procurement and manufacturing. And they have data requirements for those. And those data requirements could be integrating something like price and availability into their tools so that as their buying team is looking through their critical parts list, they can see inside of their, you know, natively inside of their tools, what parts are available. It could be bringing part specifications and life cycle and lead time data into a PLM that doesn't have that information natively available as well too. You know, those are kind of, you know, two, I think, really, really popular OEM sort of use cases for data, both, again, and I don't want to say that price and availability is exclusively a supply chain problem either. I think everybody in the design phase should be concerned about, is this part widely available in the inventory or available at all? And how many trusted distributors are selling it? And I think they should be concerned, obviously, about price as well, too. So I think that there are use cases for the data across the entire spectrum of, and, you know, the realization of an electronic assembly.
Yeah, that's exactly where my mind was heading when you had mentioned that OEMs were using it was, you know, PLM integration or ERP integration,
yeah,
something
yeah.
like this.
Those are both very popular use cases for sure.
And I guess the natural next step when you have an API is to do like an embed.
Yeah,
is
yeah,
there
yeah.
Any
yeah.
progress on embeds?
Yeah, yeah. So we have a few embeds that that we do support. There's a price and availability embed that we have that is something that is adopted by other public web experiences and other websites. But it's also then integrated for internal decision making as well too. And it's a nice tool. It allows with just a few lines of code somebody to for a developer to take that and bring that into their own user experience. Again, it could be behind a firewall or it could be a public experience as well too. So we have a price and availability embed. We also have an embed of our bill of material tool as well too. And I think that's something that's extremely powerful because it takes you know, that one off the ability to search for parts one off and allows you to upload an entire bill of material. There's some really cool tech behind that as well too, such as automatic column detection, so you don't have to have your columns in a specific order with necessarily your part number in column A or something of that nature. And it recognizes if a column is a part number, if it's a description, et cetera. So there's some really cool tech behind our bill of material tool, our BOM tool, but that's an embed as well too. So there are some embeds out there. If you go to the nexar.com website, we have information on what those embeds are and potential use cases for them as well too.
Absolutely, yeah. And we'll for the viewers out there who are curious, we'll include some links to all of this stuff in the show notes. So go check that out. So what's on the horizon for Nexar? What are some of the newer product releases that have been coming out? And, you know, what can designers expect in terms of, you know, getting these data sets into an easily consumable, actionable format so that they can make those critical supply chain decisions?
Yeah, this is a good lead in. This is something we spent a lot of time on over the last several months. And we released a couple months ago a product that we call our Electric Design to Delivery Index, or EDDI, or affectionately internally we call it the EDI. And essentially what the EDI is it's two different indexes where we are trying to provide users with free insight into what's happening in the electronic space in general. There's a supply index and there's a demand index. This is a free report. Again, you can go to nexar.com and you can subscribe to it. And it'll get delivered to your inbox in a PDF form on a monthly basis. But really what the index does, regardless if you're talking about supplier demand, we use the same time frame for both. So what we're doing is we're pegging this index to a start of January 2020, which is pre-pandemic. And we think the closest date that we can find to what's, you know, what everybody thought was normal. So we tried to find, you know, what we're trying to do is peg this index to a time frame where we felt like market conditions were considerably stable. But what the Eddy does is it shows both of that supply signal and the demand signal. It shows 2 years of history. So you're going to see the last 2 years across, I believe it's, we have 9 categories and then 15 subcategories below that. I can share that in the latest edition of the Eddy, our supply index, if that supply index was 100 in January of 2020, the supply index for March end was actually 85. So when you think about things, you know, an 85 index relative to 100 roughly 2.5 years ago is not all that bad. But the reality is there are some categories inside of that supply index that are seeing extreme problems. I mentioned microcontrollers earlier. That's one that's seeing one of these issues. So the microcontroller index for the month of March was a 26. And that's the lowest it's ever been for supply. And it's I believe it's now 19 consecutive months where the supply index for microcontrollers has declined. So I think what it's showing right now is there's not a lot of relief in sight for those people that are looking for off-the-shelf microcontrollers right now. And we see that across 32, 16, and 8-bit. I don't think it really matters right now that there's some pretty extreme supply issues across all those categories. The demand index itself is measured in a similar way, similar time frame. And really, it's a sourcing signal. And it's one that shows this kind of, it's designed to show the imbalance between the current immediate sourcing needs and what the supply is in the market. And so again, if we started at a 100 in the index in January of 2020, that demand index today is 165. And that's across all component categories. And again, I'll dig into microcontrollers again for this example, but microcontrollers from a demand perspective, again, if it was 100 in January of 2020, it's right now, let me confirm this, it's 416. So it's a 4x demand index change since we began tracking this in January of 2020. So there's extreme demand or an acuteness of sourcing needs for microcontrollers. And I don't think that's a surprise to anyone right now.
Okay, so I'm just thinking about this in terms of like an index that tracks, you know, securities. So I understand it's a relative index. I guess I'm just trying to kind of simplify it here. Am I to interpret the current level of 165 on the demand index to basically on aggregate mean that demand for electronic components in the categories you measure is on average 65% higher than it was at the beginning of the pandemic?
That's a great question.
Simplest way?
That's a great question. The answer is no, unfortunately. Okay. That'd be a very simple, oversimplified way of looking at this. We'd love to create a really straightforward, solution that's easily understandable. The reality is we're normalizing this across millions and millions of part numbers and across dozens of signals that we're getting in the market. And so because of that, we also need to normalize for the fact that, how fast do we think the industry is growing as well, too? The adoption of electronic componentry in all facets of our life is becoming more prevalent. And so therefore, the industry is growing at a certain rate. And so we have to kind of derate depending on how fast we think the industry is growing relative to that time in history that we're comparing it to. So there's some complexity there that doesn't quite make it as simple as you described, Zach. But the reality is, I think, it's one data point, it's one indicator that can help you understand what it is normalized today versus yesterday versus 6 months ago. I view it as being a signal of sourcing activity. It's not a compounded demand view where it's just there's a simple calculation behind it.
Okay.
I hope that's helpful.
So it's A little bit. It sounds like you're taking into account the derivative in inventory, market share by component, let's say. I don't know, something like this. I get that it's kind of a black box.
It's definitely a black box. It's something we can't obviously share our algorithms behind this and our methodologies entirely. But what I would say is again, this demand signal is really, it's designed to show the acuteness of the delta between what's available and what is the sourcing activity for that part.
Well, I think whenever someone puts out an index like this, it's going to be really interesting over time to see what else it correlates with, whether it's technological, economic, financial, whatever the case may be. Because I know that at some level they all get interrelated, and maybe it's second, third, fourth order effects. But I think it's going to be interesting to see once this gets out there and analyzed a bit deeper what this correlates with. And so that leads me to my next question.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
What other types of indices or data indicators does Nexar plan to make available to the electronics industry?
Yeah, so one of our other one of our other products is under a category that we've entitled supply chain resilience. And I think this is something that should be, kind of near and dear to everyone that's listening, is the importance of building thoughtful designs and building bombs that have resiliency to them. And essentially, if we think about what we were just describing in the indices that we put together, those are high level categories of components, and actionable insights are something that that is we want to bring not just at a category level, but also at the bill of material level. So what our supply chain resilience products allow companies to do is to take their bills of materials, to put them through our product, and to, on the other side of that, understand where they have risk, where that risk resides. One of the things we like to look at this from the perspective of is there are most companies practice second and third sourcing for critical components. And that's the dimension of risk that they're thinking about this from, is how many alternatives do I have to buy from? Our tools around supply chain resilience don't just look at is this alternate source, but it doesn't really do you any good to have alternate sources if there's never market availability of inventory, if those are hard to find components. So it really digs deep into the bill of material, into alternate sources, and it allows businesses to really understand what is their risk in aggregate and not just on a single plane.
That's very interesting, and I think this gets this takes another step towards making all of that data into a format that's actionable and tangible for folks who need to make these kind of critical decisions, and often in very compressed time frames.
And I think that's one of the keys here is these are real-time tools. They allow problems to be quickly identified, and I think at the end of the day, what most businesses are concerned with is predictability. Can I predictably build the product I'm concerned about over time? And that predictability, starts with that bill of material, and it has a direct implication on revenue for companies. So that's how we're viewing this is helping companies think about revenue predictability and by adopting these tools.
That's a great way to think about it, and I'm really excited to see what else comes out of all of these efforts to develop these, data-driven tools for businesses. I think it's interesting because I think the electronics industry indirectly drives so much innovation by making all of this, bringing all this technology into modern life, and yet in some ways we kind of lag behind what happens in, like, software development. And I think day crunching the data, making it actionable, making it interconnected, and giving it out to everybody for free is one area where the industry has maybe fallen behind what happens in the software world. So it's great to see that approach being taken by Octopart and by Nexar at large.
I mean, across the business, we're really proud of the products that we've developed. We think our roadmap is really strong and has some compelling reasons for folks to to look at our tools, to integrate them into their workflows. And I'm really bullish on the future of where we're taking things.
Well, I think we're going to leave it there because we'd love to have you come back on in the future when there are new product releases and we can have another conversation like this again.
That sounds great, Zach. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And
And
I
to
don't want
all,
to date this podcast too much, but I do want to say happy Star Wars Day to you.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Yeah, of
Back
course.
at you. All right. To all the listeners out there, please make sure to check out the show notes. You can get some more great information on Nexar. You can get some links over to Octopart and see some of the great features that have been added to the platform over the last few years. And you can also connect with Dan on LinkedIn. Are you okay if we put your LinkedIn profile up? Folks can connect with
Please
you.
do. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah,
Okay,
I'm
thank
always looking forward to connecting with interesting folks from the industry. So please reach out.
Absolutely. Okay, great. Thank you so much. And to all the listeners out there, make sure you check out the show notes and definitely don't stop learning, stay on track, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, Dan.